But first of all, it's time for our Shapiroette, and we welcome Bruce, columnist with The Nation and exec director of the Dart Center for Journalism and Trauma at Columbia University. Bruce, every time I see Joe Biden tottering towards a podium, I fear for him. He looks so frail. But his rhetoric certainly isn't. In fact, he's been quite aggressive lately, talking about war crimes on the one hand and, changing regimes on the other.
Well, President Biden really has been trying very hard, and I think succeeding by and large in projecting a very forceful image. There are things, though, that you can't change about Joe, and one of them is his tendency for his mouth to occasionally run ahead of his brain, or his heart to run ahead of his brain. And thus we had this really unusual moment in Warsaw last week, where at the wind-up, at the conclusion of clearly one of the sort of signal speeches of his presidency, he said, "For God's sake, this man cannot remain in power." And, a couple of things are really interesting and important about that at a time when the war in Ukraine still is grinding on and the siege of Mariupol and other civilian centers seems only to be worsening. One is, and this is what has gotten the most attention, the boldness and heartfelt nature of what sounds like a call for regime change. And, on the one hand, you can say, "Oh, Joe," as one tends to, and recognize it as classic Biden. But classic Biden in the face of a war where nuclear weapons are on the rhetorical table takes on a different meaning. And I think it is clear, this reminder that Biden is often his own worst enemy.
Was his accusation that Putin's a war criminal excessive? I thought not.
Oh, certainly not. The war criminal, we are witnessing a daily war crime on a massive scale in Ukraine. Parenthesis, in a spirit of fairness, we have seen the first emerging evidence of possible war crimes by a small Ukrainian unit, some videos of what appear to be the kneecapping of Russian soldiers and some other abuses. Ukraine is going to investigate those. But there's no doubt that the targeting of civilians, the deaths of civilians, the ambushing of journalists, the kidnapping of politicians and of reporters and of citizens, all of it constitutes the kind of offenses for which the International War Crimes Tribunal in The Hague was designed. But, Biden was in Europe last week on an unusual mission for an American president, something we haven't really seen since the late days of the Cold War and the Reagan presidency, which is a president going to Europe not just to declare a policy, but to really assert American leadership. In this case, what was interesting about that speech was that the final words, "For God's sake, this man cannot remain in power," was a distraction, actually, from a notable, really notable policy speech that seemed to be defining a Biden doctrine whose elements are still unclear, but clearly involves reuniting and reasserting a formerly moribund NATO, clearly involves sending massive amounts of American money, but also reclaiming a sort of JFK to Reagan moral mantle on American leadership. That's remarkable thing. Remember, too, that Biden has been overall, and the gaffe, I think, again, was a distraction, has been threading the needle in a very delicate way on Ukraine. As recently as last week, President Zelensky was complaining that NATO is, not providing air cover for Ukraine. Biden has not forgotten clearly that this is that the threat of nuclear weapons use by Russia is very real, and there are limits to where the U.S. should go or where NATO should go. And Biden has actually exercised in policy terms a lot of restraint and tried to anchor it, I think, in a kind of compassion. And, you know, so much of his visit was taken up with visiting with refugees, with putting a human face, drawing American public attention to the human face of this war in a way that, you know, some folks may not have been quite paying attention until the president shows up.
He's back to his role as the designated mourner in a way, isn't he?
Well, he is, although it's a shift. You know, his designated mourner role of expressing empathy for people after mass shootings and other kinds of public tragedies certainly created the impression of him as a president driven by the big heart. And that is sort of behind his "this man's got to go" comment, too. I think that's his own explanation. But in Europe, I think he was trying to go past that and link the idea of solidarity with the bereaved, the bereft, and the refugee with a really robust diplomatic and military strategy.
Now, Bruce, you and I were both expecting a sort of a boost in his numbers, a sort of rally round the flag reaction. Doesn't seem to have happened.
No, it hasn't. I mean, you know, a narrow majority of Americans do favor his policy on Ukraine. I think that as with so many other issues, you know, what happens across the ocean, even when it is a massive war crime and a massive disruption of the world, captures only sporadic attention from a lot of the American public. People know there's a war.
It's the economy, stupid, as Clinton famously said.
Yes. Now, that said, you know, the Republican response to Ukraine has been so divided and confused and contradictory. I think we don't really know yet what the political meaning of this new assertive Biden foreign policy and what American outrage at the war is going to look like. I think most Americans don't really know what Biden's policy is. There's a long way to go. But there's been certainly not been any immediate political benefit to the president. And he's trying to, well, walk and chew gum at the same time. Last week, he announced a new tax on billionaires as part of a deficit reduction plan designed to recapture moderate Democrats, while at the same time doing a sort of populist nod to the need to tax billionaires. You know, he's doing stuff designed to bolster his domestic political standing and advance his domestic agenda, even while the war grinding on with the constant specter of nuclear exchange is dominating his attention.
Back in February, we were talking about Virginia Thomas, who's landed her ultra-conservative Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas in some hot water. Now, Ginny isn't simply back in the headlines. She's making them.
Oh, Ginny. Just there's Joe. Oh, Ginny. Yep, look, Ginny Thomas, longtime conservative activist, has now been captured in so cell phone transcripts on January 6th, 2021, urging the White House Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows, urging the president, then President Donald Trump, to actively overturn the election, unleash the Kraken, is in one of those notable phrases, aligning herself with Sidney Powell, the most extreme and conspiratorial of the president's nutty lawyers, along with John Eastman, a law professor, proposing a completely discredited theory of why the president could reject the election results. And look, this, the wives of Supreme Court justices, like the wives of any public figures, the spouses of any public figures, I should say, have their own political lives. This would not be an issue except for one thing. Clarence Thomas, Supreme Court Justice Thomas, was at has subsequently been ruling on the case involving whether the White House, whether the House Impeachment Committee can get the transcripts and other documents in, of those White House conversations, whether
now,
executive privilege should shield it.
The Supreme Court has left recusal decisions to the discretion of the justice in question, but there are now calls from progressives to impeach Thomas. Is that possible?
Well, impeachment of federal judges, including Supreme Court justices, is spelled out in the Constitution, right? We have had federal judges, a couple of them, most recently, I think, Elsie Hastings, a Democrat appointee district judge in Florida, impeached. But that's really, really unusual. And the last attempt to impeach a Supreme Court justice that I can recall was a liberal justice, William O. Douglas, way back in 1968 or 1969, when then House Republican leader Gerald Ford objected to some of Justice Douglas's political opinions. I doubt it will happen. There is not a legal, there's no regulatory basis for this. As you said, the Supreme Court kind of sets its own ethics standards. There's no outside guidance. It is, however, the case that now the House Impeachment Committee is deciding whether to call the wife of a sitting Supreme Court justice. And this puts us in extraordinary territory, especially because just yesterday in another case related to the Supreme Court or related to the insurrection, a federal judge ruled that a preponderance of the evidence suggested that then President Trump was conspiring to commit a felony. This doesn't mean there'll be charges. We don't, you know, where it leads is unclear, but we have moved into some very compelling legal terrain that would make the case for gathering such politically incendiary and sensitive evidence.
On that happy note, I thank you for your weekly Shapiroette, the voice of Bruce Shapiro, our voice from America.